Reading Canto 3, Chapter 6, Texts 10 through 24. Most of those don't have purports. It's a listing of what Virat Rupa does for in relation to the creation of the universe. So a few things just build the foundation for what we're going to be doing. Chapter 6 is what the Lord does, the personality of Godhead does, in response to prayers from the demigods that were in Chapter 5. And I'm still pondering on that mystery of how you can have demigods before you have the creation. You have to have the creation before you have the entities that populate the creation. Anyway, I'm pondering that one. I want to research and ask others. But in any case, going back to Chapter 3, Canto 3, Chapter 5, in Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on text 10, he refers to one verse where they say, the demigods say, text 49, O unborn one, please enlighten us. They're asking for two things. They're asking for enlightenment or knowledge, and they're asking for the capacity, potency, the power to do their service, because they don't understand how to do it and they don't feel they have the strength to do it. So please enlighten us regarding the ways and means by which we can offer you all enjoyable grains and commodities so that both we and all other living entities in this world can maintain ourselves without disturbance and can easily accumulate the necessities of life both for you and for ourselves. In Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he says that the Lord, personality of Godhead, remembered such prayers as this one. So they're looking for enlightenment, how to conduct the charge that's been given them. They assist Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma gets the credit, but they assist Lord Brahma in creating the universe, or at least they're part of the creation of the universe. So the elements have been manifest. If you recall specifically, it mentioned 23, remember that? And there's 24 in Sankhya philosophy. So the one that was missing was intelligence. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that the Lord, by his chit shakti, what is chit shakti? Sat chit ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss, right? Sat, eternality. Chit, knowledge. And ananda, bliss. So by his chit shakti, so text 10 says, Svena tejasa, Svena, his own power, his internal potency. And specifically, Vishwanath is saying, the chit portion of his internal potency, the knowledge potency of his internal potency, with the knowledge portion of his internal potency. So by his chit-shakti, he, the personality of Godhead, manifested the universal form, so that the elements could perform their functions. So the elements were there. You know, just like Prabhupada challenges the scientists, there's the ingredients. Can you produce life? They don't have what the demigods also didn't have. They don't have the knowledge, nor do they have the strength. So it's not, nor will they ever. It's not something cute, or one day science will evolve and they'll be able to do it. Not so. Even Prabhupada speaks, they're speaking of creating life in test tubes. But all that they're doing, forget there was one scientist that said, all that science does is mirror what's already going on within nature. Meaning, as Prabhupada says, wombs of mothers, not only human, but all species, are producing life since the beginning of time. So if they create an artificial womb and do the same thing, they get a Nobel Prize. What about, and that's just replicating the one that exists since time immemorial. So what about a Nobel Prize, or giving credit to the one who made the first one that they're just making a replica of, that they will not do? Or here's another, just as a for example. This is from Bhajanarayan Prabhu, because he lives in California. I can't verify that this happened, but I trust that he's representing properly. The engineers that had the challenge of building the Bay Bridge in San Francisco, they spent a decade studying spider webs and using whatever are the dynamics, physical laws of spider webs, they created the Bay Bridge. Just reproducing, mirroring what's already there in nature. So they get a great credit, they build the Bay Bridge. What about the spiders? The spiders didn't go to spider school to build spiders. Where does that intelligence come from? Etc. So here we have, in the primordial reconstruction of the universe, at the beginning of the life of Brahma, not just the beginning of another day of Brahma, it's the beginning of the life of Brahma, and everything is dormant. The demigods see the elements that the Lord has manifest, and what do we do? So with his own chit-shakti, he, Vishwanath says, manifested the universal form so that the elements could perform their functions. Which infers then the demigods also received the knowledge how to put the elements together, kind of like the scientists studying the spider web. So whatever the intelligence the spider has to make the spider web, which the scientists study to make the Bay Bridge, the demigods need intelligence, and they're not just doing it, they're going to school. They're going to Krishna's school. And he, with his chit shakti, his knowledge potency, he's enabling the elements to perform their functions. And then he adds, Shruti says, the Shrutis say, Chakshushash, Chakshur Uta, Shrotasya Shrotram, which is, I am the power in the eye and the power in the ear. So the eyes see and the ear hears, but the power to see and to hear, I am that. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the impersonalists render it differently. Brahman. But Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, Krishna is the basis, the Pratishta of Brahman. So he is, in other words, Parabrahman. He is Brahman, he is Parabrahman. He is the basis, the power, the Shakti that enables the eyes to see and the ears to hear. The last part of his purport, this means that the Karana Shakti, Karana means causal, the power of producing results, that's his rendering, the power of producing results manifests in the effect. So the desired effect is the creation. The demigods have a service to do. Help Lord Brahma produce the creation. They want the intelligence, how to, and the strength to take that intelligence and do. So the Lord, this is just doing it slow motion here. The Lord hears their prayer. He manifests the universal form by his internal potency, his chit shakti specifically, so that the elements then can perform their functions and the demigods can perform their functions with the elements. And then he steps back and says, another way of saying the same thing is, the karana shakti, the power producing results, manifests the effect. So he is creating, and the demigods and Lord Brahma are the instruments of that. Yes? Now later in this chapter, chapter 6, it speaks about the living entities and the varna and the ashram portion of what those living entities' duties are. And if you just remember this from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks, Chatur Varna Maya Shrishtam. Shrishtam means creates. Shrishti is creation. Chatur Varnam Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasham. And after that, Krishna says, but lo and behold, I don't do anything. Yes?
Yes.
I create, but actually I don't create. He's doing through the agency of his potencies. In that sense, he doesn't create because the potencies create. But behind the potencies is the potent. So he's the efficient cause, and these are the immediate cause, and then there's the effect. Bhavati. Voila. There it is. And Vedic mantra similarly bhavati, because the mantra resonates the same as the personality of Godhead. They're non-different, especially the names of the Supreme Lord are non-different than the Supreme Lord, for example, and he's present, and by his presence things come to proper order, and by forgetfulness of his presence there's another rules. Things are still under his control, but they seem to be in disorder or disarray for want of following the codes of the Vedas by ignoring the personality of Godhead. And so in that ignorance, you get chaos instead of order. If you want order from chaos, that's what the demigods, they want order from chaos. They turn to the personality of Godhead and he invests his chit shakti. So then there's the intelligence and then the capacity for the elements to be properly configured. Because otherwise it's chaos. It's disorder, it's random. Entropy. And over time, entropy becomes more random. So how do you get from random entropy, how do you get order? Not by physical laws. Physical laws say entropy increases over time. So how do you get order from chaos? Intelligence. And intelligence has its basis as a person. Consciousness. This is one of the, it's really subtle, but it's the issue that our Bhaktivedanta Institute folks have with the intelligent design folks. Intelligent design folks, in part because they're dealing with the scientific community, they speak of intelligence as needed to bring about complex organisms. And it's, to say otherwise is silly, but our BI folks have an issue with the intelligent design folks by saying that yes, intelligence certainly is needed, but the real thing is consciousness, because without consciousness, what do you have? Intelligence doesn't do anything. And consciousness implies a person. So then the intelligent design folks, intelligence implies a person. Where do you get intelligence without a person? Anyway, it's subtle. But they make, our BI advocates make a very strong case. We just make a lot of noise. And it's I guess you need to be a scientist to get the difference, or the consciousness studies, like the BI in Bombay, they were doing consciousness studies, and it's different than, consciousness is different than intelligence. Intelligence is animated by consciousness, but consciousness exists and is the basis and support of intelligence, and the wielding of intelligence. So it's something. Their issue is something like our issue of God as a person, not just God as Brahman. Anyway, back to where we are. Text 10 of chapter 6. We ended with 9, and I'll just repeat what 9 says. 9 says, the gigantic universal form is represented by 3, 10, and 1 in the sense that he is the body and mind of the sense, and he is the body and mind and senses, the body and mind and senses, adi atmaka, adi Daivaka, for the senses implies the controllers of the senses. He is the dynamic force for all movements by 10 kinds of life energy. So we discussed the 10 types of life here. He, the Supersoul, manifests these 10 types of life here. And And those life airs then move the senses in relation to the sense objects and move the organs of the body so you can move, you can function. And he is the one heart where life energy is generated. So we that, rather than doing that again. Text 10. The Supreme Lord is the Supersoul of all the demigods entrusted with the task of constructing the cosmic manifestation. Being thus prayed to by the demigods, he thought to himself and thus manifested the gigantic form for their understanding. So the form gives something like a blueprint, but the form is more than just a blueprint, as we're hearing Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say. It's enlivening and illuminating the elements so that the elements could perform their functions. So behind that there's a causal principle, a causal personality. And thus, the cause is producing an effect. So Vishwanath starts his commentary by saying, asking a question. What was the purpose of the Lord in entering as the Antaryami to manifest the 3, 10, and the 1 Shaktis? So that's what we're hearing. Vishwanath not only just explains what's being said, he goes back a step and presents there's a question that this what is being said is answering. And the question is, why did he do this? To produce these details. The 3, the 10, and the 1. It's so that the prayer of the demigods could be responded to. And then they can do their service unto him. Okay. Prabhupada's purport for text 10. Having heard what we just heard, try to appreciate what Prabhupada does in his purport. He wants his reader, his audience, that's us, to be protected from impersonalism. In the different types of impersonalism. Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Paschacadi. So he's doing that. The scientific type of impersonalism, the spiritual presenter or teacher, that type of impersonalism. So he strongly is establishing personalism. God is a person. Listen to his purport. The impersonalists are captivated by the gigantic universal form of the Supreme. They think that the control behind this gigantic manifestation is imagination. Intelligent persons, however, can estimate the value of the cause by observing the wonders of the effects. For example, the individual human body does not develop from the womb of the mother independently, but because the living entity, the soul, is within the body. Without the living entity, the material body cannot automatically take shape or develop. When any material object displays development, it must be understood that there is a spirit soul within the manifestation. He said the same thing 3 times. just different language. Similarly, the gigantic universe has developed gradually, just as the body of a child develops. The conception that the capital T transcendence enters within the universe is therefore logical, besides scriptural. As the materialists cannot find the soul and the supersoul within the heart, similarly, for want of sufficient knowledge, they cannot see that the supreme soul is the cause of the universe. The Lord is therefore described in the Vedic language as avan manasa gochara, or beyond the conception of words and minds, plural. End of paragraph. Because something cannot be conceived by the mind. Or perceived by the senses. Or properly described in words. It doesn't exist. That's not. Paragraph. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, the mental speculators try to bring the supreme within the purview of words and minds, but the Lord refuses to be so intelligible. The speculator has no adequate words or mind to gauge the infinity of the Lord. The Lord is called Adhokshaja, or the person who is beyond the perception of the blunt, limited potency of our senses. Then he goes into the Dr. Frog program. The mundane PhDs are completely unable to speculate on the Supreme with their limited senses. Such attempts by the puffed up PhDs are compared to the philosophy of the frog in the well. A frog in a well was informed of the gigantic Pacific Ocean and he began to puff himself up in order to understand or measure the length and breadth of the Pacific Ocean. Ultimately, the frog burst and died. Then here's another one. The title PhD can also be interpreted as plow department. A title meant for the tillers of the paddy field. The attempt of the tillers in the paddy field to understand the cosmic manifestation of the cause beyond such wonderful work can be compared to the endeavor of the frog in the well to calculate the measurement of the Pacific Ocean. Paragraph. The Lord can reveal himself only to a person who is submissive and who engages in his transcendental living service. Or he chooses to reveal himself to such persons. The demigods controlling the elements and ingredients of universal affairs prayed to the Lord for guidance, and thus he manifested his gigantic form as he did at the request of Arjuna. Okay, so the rest of the part that we're going to read is just a listing of following this Chit Shakti manifesting the universal form so the demigods could have their prayer answered. It describes like the domino. That was the cause and here comes the effect so that we can have a nice creation. Text 11. Maitreya said, "You may now hear from me how the Supreme Lord separated himself into diverse forms of the demigods after the manifestation of the gigantic universal form," which still leads this puzzling thing. There were demigods and then he separated and then there were demigods. Purport. The demigods are separated parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord as are all other living entities. The only difference between the demigods and the ordinary living entities is that when the living entities are rich in pious acts of devotional service to the Lord, and when their desire to lord it over the material energy has vanished, they are promoted to the post of demigods, who are entrusted by the Lord with executing the management of the universal affairs. Text 12. Agni, or heat, separated from his mouth, universal form's mouth, and all the directors of the material affairs entered into it in their respective positions. By that energy, the living entity expresses himself in words. Report. The mouth of the gigantic universal form of the Lord is the source of the speaking power, the director of the fire element, is the controlling deity, or the Adidaiva. The speeches delivered are Adiatma, or bodily functions, and the subject matter of the speeches is material productions, or the Adibhuta principle. He's just mixing things. He's got the principle, he's got the principle, now he empowers the thing, boom, off we go. And then you have bodies that are making sounds, and they have something, the capacity in what they produce. Just manipulating principles and giving them strength and from chaos some order. Text 13. There's no purport for these. When the palate of the gigantic form was separately manifested, Varuna, the director of air in the planetary systems, now Varuna's oceans, the director of air in the planetary systems entered therein, and thus the living entity had the faculty to taste everything with his tongue. Text 14. When the Lord's two nostrils separately manifested themselves, the dual Ashvini Kumaras entered them in their proper positions and became, and because of this, the living entities can smell the aromas of everything. Text 15. Thereafter, the two eyes of the gigantic form of the Lord were separately manifested. The sun, the director of light, entered them with the partial representation of eyesight, and thus the living entities can have vision of forms. Text 16. When there was a manifestation of skin separated from the gigantic form, Anima, the deity directing the wind, entered with partial touch, and thus the living entities can realize tactile knowledge. Text 17. When the ears of the gigantic form became manifested, all the controlling deities of the directions entered into them with the hearing principles by which all living entities hear and take advantage of sound. Purport. The ear is the most important instrument in the body of the living entity. Sound is the most important medium for carrying the message of distant and unknown things. The perfection of all sound or knowledge enters through the ear and makes one's life perfect. The entire Vedic system of knowledge is received by oral reception only, and thus sound is the most important source of knowledge. Text 18. When there was a separate manifestation of skin, the controlling deities of sensations and their different parts entered into it, and thus the three entities feel itching and happiness due to touch. Purport. For sense perception, there are two principal items, touch and itching, and both of them are controlled by the skin and hairs on the body. According to Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti, the controlling deity of touch is the air passing within the body, and the controlling deity of the hairs on the body is Oshadhya. For the skin, the object of perception is touch, and for the hairs on the body, the object of perception is itching. Text 19. When the genitals of the gigantic form separately became manifest, then Prajapati, the original living creature, entered into them with his partial semen, and thus the living entities can enjoy sex pleasure. Text 20. The evacuating channel separately became manifest, and the director named Mitra entered into it with partial organs of evacuation, thus the living entities are able to pass stool and urine. Text 21. Thereafter, when the hands of the gigantic form separately became manifested, Indra, the ruler of the heavenly planets, entered into them. And thus the living entity is able to transact business for his livelihood. Hands. Text 22. Thereafter, the legs of the gigantic form separately became manifest, and the demigod named Vishnu, parentheses, not the personality of Godhead, entered with partial movement. This helps the living entity move to his destination. No purport. Text 23. Just going to do two more. When the intelligence of the gigantic form separately became manifest, Brahma, the Lord of the Vedas, entered into it with the partial power of understanding, and thus an object of understanding is experienced by living entities. And finally, text 24. After that, the heart of the gigantic form separately manifested itself, and into it entered the moon demigod with partial mental activity. Thus the living entity can conduct his mental speculations. And the list goes on, but I'm not going to read further. This and that and the other thing separated out. But the important principle goes back to what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur expresses, that from the Shruti, when the Lord hears, then we can hear. When the Lord has a sense of touch, we can feel the touch sensation, and so on. Our capacity is based upon His capacity. Going way back, living entities are in a dormant state of consciousness. The elements are in a dormant state, an unmanifest state. The Lord desires for the living entities to have another chance to restore their consciousness to a proper condition. So He creates this whole thing for that purpose. But meanwhile, in their dormant state of consciousness, they have these separate desires. So the facility for that is provided. So that's one of the two purposes of creation. They can act out their independent proclivities. But the greater purpose is to revive their original Krishna consciousness, to rectify that independent spirit, instead to use properly in a not independent or dependent manner, depending upon the Supreme Lord. So that's our practice. That's our sadhana, or, you know, our practical activity. Like people ask, how do I be Krishna conscious in the workplace? You know, read Srimad Bhagavatam and understand how you're able to do anything, and what's the purpose of that anything that you're being able to do, and to do it for Krishna. Anyway, that's a short answer. If that's the principle that drives whatever else that you do to be Krishna conscious in the workplace, or other than when you're chanting japa and reading Srimad Bhagavatam and worshipping the deity, doing the direct activities of devotional service. We have these other things because we have other desires. And going back to that verse 49 from chapter 5, the demigods wanted to have their necessities and those who they would be creating bodies for, their necessities, please provide the intelligence and the strength to do it. So this is it. We're hearing so that we can express ourselves and we can move from one place to another and we can hear things. And going back to something we said the other day, the real simple version is, God said, let there be, and so there was. Okay. Could you do that one again? Can you break that down? So here it is broken down. One last thing, and we'll end. These verses that we just read, text 11 through 24, The various features of the universal form are being manifest. His ears, his skin, his legs, etc. And the demigods are then manifest. But, you know, we spoke before that the universal form was manifest, and now it's the universal form is being manifest. So there's the subtle, and there's the less subtle, more, here's the dimensions of the different components and elements of the universal form. Similarly, like the question of who was it that was making these prayers before there were demigods, it says there were demigods. So now that the demigods are entering into that feature of the universal form and thus being able to do their thing. So somehow, it's further confirmation that there's something subtle or primordial. The other day I used this term, prototype, of what we now have as demigods. And there's different demigods within each universe, and because there are different universes, there's different demigods. But there's the essence or the principle or the prototype, then by time progressing, then things manifest. The demigods manifest, the details of universal form manifest. Because the time energy is acting here, because you need time energy in order to have physical events. If you don't need physical events, then you don't need the time energy, because time is eternal. Okay. Hope it's all very clear. Any discussion?
has this conception of intelligent design. Does it say that there is an intelligent person behind it, behind everything, or like
they don't. They're playing, they're squaring off. They're confronting the establishment, the intellectual power base of material scientists that say there's no God. So they're aware. They'll be accused of just being religious sentimentalists. So they don't say God is a person. They just say intelligence. Intelligence. It infers. But they don't directly say. And they're criticized. That you're really, this is just a Trojan horse. Your real program is you're religionist. You're trying to bring religion to science. Get out of here. Science is not for religion. There's religion. And there's science. Get your Trojan horse out of here. So they don't say. No, it's we're not saying God is a person. We're not saying religion. We're saying there must be some intelligence to bring whatever that is. You can infer what you like. We're just saying it has to be, there has to be intelligence. To get this much information stored in the DNA, it takes intelligence.
When it said like intelligent, I thought they were saying like intelligent person or something, not like
the atheist scientists, the power base team that don't want religion. They want to like we're and you're over there. They immediately blow the whistle. Wait a minute, you're breaking the rules. You made the rules. And we're deciding you're breaking the rules. Can't bring God into it. Because there's only one thing. That's the rule. There's laws of nature, and there's matter that's covering those. Matter and the laws that govern matter. That's all there is. That's the rule. Play the game, that's the rule. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, what I understood from the class was because of the universal form and the demigods entering the universal form, the living entities are able to see, smell,
yes,
hear, and everything.
That's correct.
So, with that, does it mean that the demigods have completely different bodies than us?
Well, why would you ask that question? Is your body different than his body?
Yes.
Okay, then the demigods' bodies are different than our bodies.
But that means sight and sound and smell and all that.
They're controllers of that capacity. You're not controlling him. You don't have that empowerment. But the demigods have that empowerment. They're not exactly controlling him or you, they're controlling your capacity to digest your food, for example.
But what kind of bodies did they have if it is not coming from the universal form?
Well, I didn't say, it's not that it doesn't come from the universal form. They're parts of the universal form, as are we. You know, it's coming up. Stay tuned. The living entities and their bodies and their capacities, according to Varna and Ashram, that's part of the universal form. Part of the universe. The demigods are also part of the universe. But their body is not identical with our body, any more than your body is identical with another person's body. They have power. They're invested with power to control functions. of the universe, in which part of which is our body.
Yeah.
You can look ahead. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I had this question of, like when we are hearing these verses, it makes it very clear that behind everything there is a person
who
is creating all these things.
Yes, that's the idea.
And then still there is a kind of a dullness, and I feel like, you know, there is an intellectual appreciation, but that's not how we live our life. We carry that conception.
That's also correct.
So how to make it take it at a deeper level and...
How do you teach your daughter something? You know, she gets the mechanics of it, and then you just keep doing it. And okay, she's doing RT, and she knows the mechanics of doing RT. Now, how do you transfer to, you know, from the heart, and when coming before, you know, it's by by hearing from you and by your nice example. And that's the, at least you're, as a mother, you're creating the opportunity for her to internalize that. So there has to be something from within that she wants to get that experience, not just do the behavior. And seeing that, Krishna can reciprocate. She gets some experience. So Krishna wants to give that to us, the, you know, consciousness of Him. He's crying, and we're, you know, not there yet, fully. We're not sufficiently wanting that relationship with Him, that awareness of Him in all circumstances of our life. So it's gradual. So it's the gradual is letting go of our attachments to that which helps give support to the potential for independent enjoyment. We're attached. We're attached to Maya. Independent enjoyment. And through two primary means. Fruitive activity, using our senses to get something so we can enjoy our senses. Or mental speculation. Thinking of ourselves, yes, it's true, I'm independent. And I, you know, therefore I'm God. We're attached to those. And the fear is, if I let go of those, I'll have nothing. Like Arjuna. We know, what if I don't make it? I'll be nowhere. I let go of this and I don't have that. So we're holding on. So it's gradual. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah.